We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
In 2003, Nike signed 13-year-old Freddie Adu to a seven-figure contract. But Freddie didn't live up to the hype. He has turned down every single documentary project looking closely at the details of his career. Until now.
People are going to look at everything you did because of the hype surrounding your arrival and what they think you can be.
I'm Grant Wall, and this is American Prodigy, Freddie Adu, from Blue Wire Podcasts.
Blue Wire.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, the sports movie podcast, brought to you by Blue Wire Podcast, and this week presented by Indeed and BetOnline.ag. I am your host, Kyle Bandujo. Before we get into it, want to give a quick shout out to everyone who reached out and just said really nice things about our 100th episode special last week. Did a little best of clip thing for anyone who didn't check it out, and heard a lot of nice things. It was very much appreciated. Looking forward to doing 100 more. Big Screen Sports comes at you every single week. A couple weeks ago, we had director Thaddeus Matula on, the Emmy and Peabody Award-winning director of the sports documentaries The Pony Excess and Brian and the Boz. Last time we had him on, we were talking about The Pony Excess, about the SMU death penalty scandal, one of my favorite sports documentaries ever. I think, in the pinnacle of 30 for 30. Joining me today to talk about his second 30 for 30, Brian and the Boz, it is Thaddeus Matula. Thaddeus, thanks so much for returning to Big Screen Sports.
Kyle, thank you. You know, for a minute there when you were talking about everybody responding and saying good things, I thought it was going to be about the last time I was on, and then it happened to be your 100th episode. So, you know, I guess
I did hear really good things about the last one. A lot of people, you know, were very interested about what you had to say about The Pony Excess and the behind the scenes of that one. I think that's an important documentary to a lot of people. It's a favorite to a lot of people. But I want to roll right into Brian and the Boz.
Let's do it.
How did this one, you know, come about? Because at this point, you have, you've done The Pony Excess. The Pony Excess has been, you know, I think by all accounts, it was critically acclaimed. I think it was, you know, very successful. And, you know, you talked about last time on how much work went into just getting this one done. You know, at first you were looking for private investors, then ESPN gets involved. And was the process for getting Brian and the Boz going a little smoother? And how did you become connected with this project?
Well, smoother is a, I don't know. I can't say it was smoother. My executive producer on Pony Excess said a great thing at the end. He said, "Don't expect your phone to start ringing." And it really didn't. However, the Brian and the Boz film did start with my phone ringing. And it was a couple of producers from Oklahoma originally. They knew Brian Bosworth. They knew Coach Switzer. They had great ties to the university, Oklahoma University, and they just got it in their mind that, like, they really liked these 30 for 30s, and something should be done about Bosworth. And so I get this call basically from this gentleman named Parker Douglas. And Parker basically lays out that he's got Brian Bosworth, he's got Coach Switzer, and he's got the blessing of the University of Oklahoma. Oh, and he has an investor who's willing to put up $1 million. He would just like some advice on how to make a sports documentary. Now, straight up, he's telling me that this is going to be about Brian Bosworth. And I have to tell you, in my head, I'm like, I don't even know if I want to see a movie about the Boz. And so, you know,
I was going to ask, I want to jump in real quick. When you heard, just when you heard the name Brian Bosworth, because it sounds like right away you get Bosworth and Barry Switzer on board, who are probably the two most essential people you need for this one. But as we touched last time with the Pony Access, you're an 80s college football fan, a Southwest Conference college football fan. What was your relationship with Brian Bosworth? Where, you know, what, when you heard his name, what did you, you know, because I think in this documentary touches on it, Brian Bosworth means a lot of things to a lot of different people.
Yeah. So the thing is that Bosworth is from Dallas. He's from the Dallas area, and I'm from Dallas. And one thing that Dallas does a great job of is just like claiming people and being really proud of them. I mean, up until Lance Armstrong had his issues, it was always exciting for Dallas to say, yeah, he might live in Austin now, but he's from Dallas. And then, like, there was a time when Tom Cruise bought a house in Dallas, and everybody was like, oh, Tom Cruise, new Dallas resident. I don't even know if he lived in it other than, you know, shooting a movie here. When I was young, it was exciting, this new character, the Boz, even if he had gone across the border. We still, as Dallas sports fans, were, you know, apprised of the exploits of the Boz, and he was fun. I mean, he had this kind of villain outlaw aspect to him that really worked with the idea of the Sooners, and he it was a great villain. However, when he went too far and really he was just fully became a big jerk, I was done with him. And so when he didn't pan out in the NFL, I mean, he had a good rookie season, but like for me, the whole Boz story was he was just a jerk who got what was coming to him. And so why would we want to watch a movie about that? Don't we know the story if you're of a certain age? And if you're not, I mean, didn't I just tell you the story there in like one sentence? Do you need to see an hour and a half on it? But then let's jump forward. So 1 week I get the call, I need advice. And 1 week later, I get another call from Parker, and he's like, how would you like to direct this thing? And I'm like, how much money did you say that your investor had?
The important questions.
Right. Well, you know, and my immediate thought was like, if I direct this, I know I'll want to see it. I'll jump in and say that, yes, they had an investor who was, you know, basically in for $1 million, but he was in for it if there could be a return. And so I sat down with him and I said, look, here's the deal. You guys are coming to me because you want this to be on ESPN. ESPN is going to own this thing if we get it on ESPN. So my experience with Pony Access was that by the time we got the deal with ESPN, we had already spent about $125,000, and that was putting together things that eventually got us the deal with ESPN. And I said to him, if you can afford to lose $125,000, then that's, let's do that. And we will get started. And at a certain point, after we have gotten started and put stuff together with that, we'll be able to go to ESPN. Now, before I get back to that, I just want to say that so what happened was in this idea of doing something about the Boz or a character that I didn't have this personal need to tell his story, I started to get interested in this persona that he had created. And then I met Brian. And when I met Brian, I met someone who liked the boss even less than I did. And he was forced to live with him. And as soon as that happened, I was like, okay, we've got a movie here. And especially because at the time that I met him, he was his father had just recently passed away. And he was really dealing with all these emotions of who he was and finding out who Brian is as a man about to turn 50. And it was the Boz character was something that he created when he was, 18. And it was a way for him to deal. He was, as he said, he was a shy kid who had a lot of fear. And he figured if he put on this larger than life, I'm not scared of anything attitude, that he could go through anything. And he did, but he then lost himself in there. By the way, I just want to note, I do live in Dallas now, after 14 years in Austin. But for those who are listening to this, in Austin, it is my fault that Brian Bosworth lives in Austin these days. So you can thank or blame me. When I was brought into the project, Brian and his then fiance, now wife, got wind that this Austin director was going to come out to LA to meet with them, to see if we all got along and we could make a movie together. But Brian and his fiance Morgan, they were like, we've never been to Austin. Brian, having gone to OU, their games were in Dallas against Texas, so literally had never been there. And so they were like, why don't you fly us to Austin, we'll meet him there. And so they did. And the dinner went great, obviously, because we made a movie. But then they stayed an extra week, and within a year they were married and living in Austin. So
If you would have asked any Oklahoma fan, where is Brian Bosworth, 30 years after his career is over, I feel like Austin is probably in the bottom five of like likely answers.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because like I'm not a Texas OU guy. I'm not an OU guy, but as an SMU guy, when I moved to Austin, literally, like, burnt orange was everywhere, and I know we're reevaluating the Eyes of Texas, the song, but when I moved there, I mean, it was just such a horrible song to me, because everywhere I went, there was a Longhorn, there was burnt orange, and it was like, do not think you can escape it, and it was echoing in my head. I just was like, gosh, I can't get away, they're on me all the time.
There's three professional football teams in Texas. There's the Cowboys in Dallas, the Texans in Houston, the Longhorns in Austin. It's everywhere.
Exactly.
But when you get, after you meet Bosworth and you sense, you get that sense of, okay, we've got something here with his regret. Because like with the Pony Excess, you knew the story. You knew exactly what you wanted to tell. It was a passion project of yours. When you saw how Bosworth felt about his antics in the 80s and that character he created, is that when you had the idea, okay, this is how we're going to do this?
Yeah, I mean, there was an idea from the original producers as to what they wanted to do. They had this idea of calling the film Barry and the Boz, and it was just going to be about the end of Switzer's time and Brian coming in and this kind of thing. And as I got to know Brian, who we knew was going to be the thrust of that narrative, two things happened. One is, for a while we changed the title to Feeding the Monster. That was a line that Barry Switzer used, in terms of, the monster was OU football and he had to feed it wins. And, Barry will bristle, but I feel like, in that need, to feed the monster wins, he lost something of himself. And the same thing happened with Brian, in my opinion, that he created his own monster so he could feed it wins. But as I could see that Brian was having this, active reevaluation of who he was while we were doing this, it became apparent that was absolutely our story. And it was... The interesting thing is that Pony Excess, that film was a very much more personal story to me overall, but it's told in this big, you know, glorious format. Whereas Brian and the Boz was not a personal story to me when it, you know, before it existed, but it is a very intimate, it's the much more personal story. You have this great father-son story, which is played out in three different tracks. And one is Brian and his actual father that he could never please. Brian and his, you know, second father, Coach Switzer, who did not give him any kind of boundaries, and he had to push, see how far he could push. And then the third is Brian and his relationship with his son, which was just an awesome portion of this, because the thing is that Brian decided he wanted to move back from California to Texas because both of his daughters, who were the older of his three kids, he felt were not done favors by having gone to high school in Malibu and not having had a sort of a touchstone. And so, with his final kid, he wanted to try and give his son some kind of more connection to reality. So the entire thought process of moving back to Texas, yes, they loved being in Austin, and so that's great. They were already thinking of moving to Texas, just going to Austin sealed it where they were going to go. And so we knew, though, that he was coming to Austin, and he had moved to Austin for this relationship with his son. And, you know, the thing that I often say about the films that I quote unquote make, I'll talk, you know, metaphorically about them. I see these films as already existing, and I don't necessarily make them. I can just maybe see parts of them a little better than others can, and others will see other parts better than I can. And filmmaking, I feel, is the ultimate team sport art, because we all come together and we then remove the excess so that everyone can see the beauty that's already there. There's a great, I may have shared this last time, but there's a great Michelangelo quote that I always go with, and it's, the angel was already in the marble I carved until I set it free. And so that's what I see. It's so much easier for me to be able to enjoy the films that I am a part of by understanding that they don't make me good. They are good on their own, and I have to seek that good. So in creating Brian and the Boz, we have this whole idea of Brian wanting to give this new life for Max. And so we were able to eventually include that in the film. So let me now come back a few years so you can get this process. So when we got the original investor or the donor, I guess we could call him now, to put in the original money, the plan was to go out and start shooting this film like we would, you know, at the level that we'd be shooting the eventual film when ESPN would come in with the money, if they were going to come in. And this was based on the idea of, with Pony Excess, the $125,000 that we had spent on that was all piecemeal and putting together whatever we could without this idea of, you know, a solid end game for it. And so everything that we had done up until the point of getting the ESPN deal on Pony Excess, that was all with the idea that was going to be of the quality that we were making it. We were just, you know, shoestring and bubblegum, chewing gum, you know, putting together with duct tape. But then we got the deal and we ended up reshooting basically every interview we had already shot when we started with the full ESPN budget money. But with this on what became Brian and the Boz, we put that money to work, and we shot 10 interviews at the level of what the final production would be. Maybe it was 12 interviews, but between 10 and 15. And then worked with my producers and an editor, and we worked for maybe, you know, 2 months really sculpting what we felt the film was going to be. I mean, maybe it wasn't 2 months. Maybe it just felt like 2 months. But then we had out of that a sizzle reel that we were able to take to ESPN. Now, so I'm sure that you, as a viewer, you might think that after seeing Pony Excess, wouldn't ESPN want to immediately work with the guy who directed that again, just as soon as possible?
That was absolutely my assumption, that ESPN would have just cut the check right away, because I don't know anything about the film business.
Right. So here's the deal. Like, yes, they did want to work with me again, but like, but it wasn't just on anything. So, which was kind of shocking to me, and you know, I work to be a humble guy, but at the time it didn't make sense to me, because I was like, hey, I just showed you what I could do with something. Why, what's the problem here? And I had called them immediately when I got the call about doing something with Bosworth and having access to him. And and you know, the call was pretty much like, hey, we get Boz stories pitched to us all the time. We're not really all that interested. And then by the time, you know, we put together the sizzle reel, it's like, you know, it's a good take, but we're doing the Bo Jackson film right now. And so we did the sizzle reel, and it was a good, you know, 18 months, 2 years later before we actually got the deal with ESPN. And that's, you know, that's an interesting story in itself, but you know, there was a time where the project really did feel dead, and I went back to the original producers and said, hey, look, would you mind if I took this back to ESPN myself? And I actually worked with Billy Corbin, the director of The U and Cocaine Cowboys.
Huge fan of Billy Corbin over here.
Yes.
Everyone go watch Screwball on Netflix, by the way. Just a side note.
And his new film is called 537 Votes, which is on HBO Max. And
I haven't checked it out yet, but I need to. That is about the Bush v. Gore recount, correct?
Exactly. It's really good. I mean, I watched it basically right when we were recording the last one, which was right before this election, and it was good and scary to watch. But so Billy and I, he had when Pony Excess premiered, in my interview for that played right as the movie began, I said that SMU was the U before the U, and Billy tweeted that as the movie was starting. And that started a social media friendship that became more than that. I was invited to go speak at Indiana University about Pony Excess. And I said, you know, if you're flying me there and you have a program around it, I was like, I'm sure I can get Billy to go as well. And so Billy Corbin and I had a nice, fun weekend in Bloomington, Indiana, and even drove across the state to see a Notre Dame football game, because Indiana did not have a home game that weekend. But Billy thought it was, you know, a slam dunk too, that like that I should do this for ESPN. So basically, it was his plan. He was like, look, his relationship with ESPN was a lot tighter than mine. He would visit with them. He was on the phone with them often. And he's like, look, why don't you just sort of sit on it, and I'll call you when the time is right. And I remember I had just been filming a day in Washington, D.C. I was filming a piece about frog conservation, and you know, just nothing like college football, right? And I'm done with it, and I'm at dinner with this biologist and his wife, and it's a lovely dinner. And then my phone starts ringing, and I was just trying to turn it off, and it was Billy, and I was like, I have to take this. And so I answered.
Can't turn down Billy Corbin ever.
Right. So I get on the phone, and he's like, you have to send the sizzle in again tomorrow. And so I did. And then we got the deal. And, you know, I want to go back and talk about the gentleman who put up the $125K, because that's a really, you don't get things like that unless it's these kind of sports documentaries, and really only about, you know, college sports, because that's the only place where people with excess money, already get the idea of putting in money to something that they're just going to lose just because they want to see more out of their football or basketball program. And
it's funny how that even applies to college football documentaries. Like, college football is the and you hammer that home in the Pony Excess. Like, it is the craziest vanity project for these rich people who just love to spend money to see stuff about their college football teams.
Exactly. And so I sat down with this guy, and by the way, he was this gentleman was the first person to really explain fracking to me. So he showed me all the designs and all that. So you understand where he got his money.
Yeah. You know where he lives, where right. his money's from.
Right. And so I asked him, I was like, what do you really want to get out of this film? I mean, what are you putting your money in for? Because it really is just a very expensive ticket. And it came down to that he really wanted to see Brian Bosworth in the College Football Hall of Fame. And I was like, done. We can deliver that. That'll happen. And in fact, it did. The very first vote after the film came out, he was finally elected into the College Football Hall of Fame. And we didn't mention that he wasn't in the College Football Hall of Fame in the movie at all. And my producer and I, we had a few knockdown, drag out fights, or, you know, just genuinely arguments that might have gotten a little loud about whether or not to include the fact that he wasn't in the College Football Hall of Fame in there. And I think you might know him, Chip Reeves. I think you've talked to him, actually.
Yeah. Chip and I had a phone conversation a few weeks ago.
So Chip, he was like, no, we need to drive this home. We got to drive it home because it's just a crime that he's not in there. I'm like, all right, we are trying to get him into the College Football Hall of Fame to make good on the guy who wrote the check to get this whole thing started. And I was like, we are not going to mention it. There's no reason to mention it. The people who know that he's not in there know that he's not in there. And all of this is going to do is just, if we remind them, then it's going to be a thing. But if they see it and they just are emotionally drawn to the story itself, then they're going to be like, yeah, you know what? Maybe it's time to forgive Brian. Maybe it's time to say, you know what? He was one of the greatest college linebackers ever, which he was. And yes, he's in the College Football Hall of Fame now. And more than that, that original investor, he's got that, and he now has an Emmy on his desk. So for any potential film investors out there, if you'd like a nice award on your desk, give me a call. I can do a few things for you, probably. Let's hope. I'm lighthearted about a lot of this, but I really have to say that like, the journey of the Boz movie and making it, it was such a gift to be present for the transformation of this man. Like I said, he moved to Austin, and then we did that storage unit scene like 2 years after we had shot the interview. So the interviews that are in the movie are 2 years apart from those the storage unit. And the storage unit, that whole thing. Came out of nowhere. But before I get into that,
before you get into that, actually, let's take a quick ad break, and then we're going to talk about the entire making of this movie, because I got a bunch more questions for you.
Sounds excellent.
Big Screen Sports is brought to you by Indeed. 2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world with more total visits than any other job site, according to Comscore. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, and you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria, so you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Right, go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply. Big Screen Sports is also brought to you by BetOnline.ag. Football is back in full swing, unless you're the Cowboys, then you just suck. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals, team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season-opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. And don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at BetOnline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Okay, we're back from ad break. And contrasting these two documentaries, Pony Excess, Brian and the Boz, the Pony Excess is done, and we talked pretty heavily about this wide variety of cast of characters, and it really doesn't center on any one person in particular. You get just great nuggets from all these people. Some people are, you know, offer a little more than others or a little more essential, but I don't think there's one person in the Pony Excess. Maybe if you don't get Dickerson, you know, or maybe even like Ron Meyer, I'm not sure it works as well, but there's a big cast of characters. With this one, you already had Bosworth. You had the most important piece. You had Barry Switzer, who I think you probably need to. I definitely don't think it works as well. Barry Switzer, coolest cat in the room. is there anyone else that when you were putting this together, because it sounds like you did a lot of the interviews, you know, before the ESPN deal, 2 years before you really got, you know, into the weeds with it. Is there anyone else that you were saying, we can't do this documentary without this person? Or once you had Boz, it was just anyone else as a cherry on top?
Yeah, I mean, coming with Boz and Barry, it was like, yeah, we got everything we need. Anybody else that we can get, great. The one that, you know, was the toughest to get was Bo Jackson, and we didn't actually really get him. You'll see him in the film, and it was basically like so impossible that we were able to sneak our question in with another project that had an interview with Bo. And it's like, hey, do you mind if we ask you two questions for this Boz documentary? I mean, it was cleared with him beforehand. It wasn't just sprung on him, but that was that. I mean, we really wanted to have Bo Jackson tell that moment, because I mean, the crazy thing is that for your listeners who aren't of an age where they remember this, but like there was a lot of conversation about that Monday Night Football game between Bo Jackson and Brian Bosworth. They were like the two young stars of the league, and both, you know, tragically for different reasons, did not have long careers. And the story was always that Boz got blown up by Bo Jackson on Monday Night Football. And really, when you see the play, that's not necessarily what happened, but Boz was this extreme anti-hero and, you know, the person you love to hate. And Bo was this Adonis guy, and he was super powerful, and he just had a good football play. But because of all the trash talk and everything going into it, there was that one play where, you know, Bo runs right into Boz and keeps running right into the end zone. And that was the story. And for me, that really wasn't the story of the film. But for people who remember the Boz, you know, the whole Boz saga, that was a big event for them. So it really felt like if we could get Bo in there, that would be great. And one of the other people that we really wanted to get, we did get in that first set of interviews, and that was Tony Casillas. Because Tony Casillas was one of the great players in OU football history. He also played for the Cowboys. So obviously, anybody who ends up playing for the Cowboys has a a bigger stage just because of its their reputation, obviously. And so, but Casillas was someone who absolutely hated the boss, and still to this day hates him. So it was just fantastic to convince him to do this, because I was, you know, we were all in conversation to get him in. And it was like, look, I want you to come on and tell us what a jerk this guy really was, you know, and don't worry about you coming off looking bad or anything like that, because you're airing dirty laundry or any of that. I mean, the whole point of you in the film is to remind us that this is not, you know, hero worshiping. This guy really had a lot of did a lot of detrimental things to the team, to people around him, and if we can have someone who can very specifically articulate, as Tony Casillas does in the film, you know, why not to root for this guy, it's going to be a great addition to the film. And you can tell me, but I don't think Tony Casillas comes off looking too terrible in the film. I think he comes off as saying, as someone who cared about his football team and didn't like to see someone with an ego wreck what he felt was wreck the team chemistry. But yeah, I mean, so like, really, it was just Tony Casillas and Bo. And I mean, obviously, the other interview we would have loved would have been with his father, but his father was a few years dead, which of course is actually why Brian was in a place where he could actually deal with these kinds of things. I mean, it's
well, let's get into that too, because you mentioned 2 years after the initial interviews you start work on the film, and you mentioned the format used for that storytelling, his father's storage shed. How did you figure out that was in play, and when did you decide to use this as a format to tell the story? Because it's one of the most effective parts about the film, is him going through the storage shed, showing his son all this memorabilia, memories from Oklahoma, memories from his pro football career, and just kind of use that to, you know, let him get a bunch of real retrospective moments and frankly, a lot of regret.
Yeah. So as I was saying right at the beginning of this, about the idea of the films already existing, this is just such a perfect example of it. So we finally got this deal, and we had started to do the work, and we had come up conceptually with, this is kind of the structure of how we're going to tell this story. And, you know, we knew the big points we wanted to hit. And in this, as we were starting up the interview process again, we get a call from Brian, who had just gotten a call from his mother in Irving, Texas. And his mother was going to be moving out of the house that she had lived in since Brian was in junior high. And she calls up Brian and says, hey, your father kept all this stuff in the attic. Do you want any of it? And Brian was like, no, but I'm sure these film guys will. And so the call comes in that, hey, my mother has all this stuff. And my first reaction is like, whoa, don't touch it. Don't touch it. We want to go with it.
Gold mine.
Right. And the funny thing is like, Chip, I think, was the one who got that call. Chip was way ahead of me. Like, because I didn't even have to tell him. Like, yes, we need to be there for that. So now, moms being what they are, the next time Brian was in Irving, his mother wouldn't let him leave without him taking the stuff in the attic. And he was like, I didn't look at it. I just carried it down to the truck, and he drove it from Irving directly to our production office in Austin, Texas. And we went through it. And by we, I mean our youngest interns. They really earned their keep. They earned their credit on it. They went through the cobweb and rodent dropping, you know, all all of this stuff from something that's been in a Texas attic for 30 years, you know. But Brian's dad had, as you see in the film, he kept everything. And so we went through, we cleaned it up, and then we put it in that storage unit, and we just repacked it in boxes, and we numbered the boxes for Brian to go through, so it actually went through in the order of the way we wanted to lay it out in the film. So yeah, I mean, I've seen the reviews of the film that say that that part feels scripted, no, it wasn't scripted. If that part feels staged, I'm like, well, of course it was staged. We had it well lit, you know, we had cameras in there, but it was Brian had not seen what his dad had kept, and obviously his son had no idea. So we actually spent, like, it was Memorial Day, and we spent the entire day going through that storage unit. It was exhausting, and we wore the two of them out. I mean, and the interesting thing is that we were already putting together the film before we actually shot that, and my editor and I, we had so many different points where it's like, okay, this is where we're going to have to go to the storage unit. And so there were all these different black spots in the film, and we were just banking on this storage unit sequence working out. And boy, did it. I mean, it was just because, like, that.
I've got a question about the setting up the storage unit.
Yeah, okay.
You need to pull back the curtain on. It's been 6 years since the movie dropped. It is okay. Was that actually the original National Communist Against Athletes Welcome to Russia shirt that he wore in that Orange Bowl he suspended for?
Yes, absolutely.
That's incredible.
And he hadn't seen it since then. He was like, he couldn't believe his father had it. Why would he keep it? It was not something his father was proud of, but, like, his father kept everything. If it was memorabilia from Brian's playing career, this is his dad was the ultimate, you know, aggressive parent, like trying to capture the glory through his kids. So we have so many 60 Minutes or E60 stories about parents totally, you know, ruining the joy of their children's sports because they're trying to have their own glory. That was absolutely Brian's dad. And that's why anything, I'm sure he would have kept, like, this was the syringe that Brian got caught using steroids with. You know, I mean, it was ridiculous. I mean, you know, he kept specific, you know, the college entrance exams, all of these different things were in there. It was ridiculous and beautiful for us. I mean, like, he kept those masks and. I don't know if we had the other famous T-shirt, if we actually showed it in the movie, but it was one, I can't even remember, it's been 6 years now, but, like, Brian was pretty famous for one of his Monday night games, not the Bo Jackson game. I think it was against John Elway in Denver, and there was this big dust up between, you know, Boz said something awful about Elway. Yeah, I mean, I don't think we showed it in the movie, but we definitely had it spoken about how Boz created these T-shirts, unbeknownst to the people of Denver, but he sold all these anti-Boz T-shirts to the people in Denver. And he made the money off of it. It was Boz's own company putting out the T-shirts. But you know, that was another thing that that his dad kept. And yes, that was absolutely the T-shirt, and it had a nice little stain on it. And his son really wanted to keep it, so his son kept it. And his son really wanted to wear it to high school one day. And as far as I know, Brian never let it happen.
But that's actually one of my favorite parts of the doc, is his recounting of the T-shirt incident, because I think it's about as regretful as he gets in the. It's a very sobering moment. He is very, like, clearly super pissed with himself and just despondent. I mean, it had been almost 30 years, and he's still. You could still see the effect. I think any other. Of my favorite scenes all had to do with, or my favorite moments all had to do with Barry Switzer and just like talking about, you know, him rolling into Boz's high school and just, you know, everything about him. What was your big takeaway from the experience with Barry Switzer? Because obviously he's not blameless in a lot of, you know, Bosworth's notoriety.
Before we move to Barry, I just want to say, you know, one thing about the T-shirt, because
go for it.
This is a great cheat for any of your listeners who are wanting to make sports films or just any kind of documentary work in general. You know, a network like ESPN and plenty of others are going to want to know, you know, what that turning point is. What's the this changes everything moment? So when I did Pony Access, I didn't realize the big advantage I already had, which was that the death penalty was a single event. And in my talking about doing that film, everything that I talked about was around that one event. And so as I was sort of moving down the line of making Brian and the Boz, I realized that one event was very important, and I was searching for that as we were putting it together, and I did not ever really think it was going to be the T-shirt moment, but as we started to get into it, I mean, that it became more and more apparent that was really when the Boz went from being a character to this out of control thing that Brian couldn't pull back anymore. And as soon as we discovered that, I just was very adamant that that's the turning point of the film. So everything we're doing is gonna wrap around that. And so while it might not be the secret to any filmmaking, especially documentaries, if you can really find that moment. And then the reason why I bring up ESPN to it is that a lot of my pitch meetings on other projects, etc., the executives really want to know what the movie's going to be about. So if you've already done, I know that sounds silly, but like everything is pretty up in the air, ethereal. But if you can tell them that it's when he wore the T-shirt that everything changed, all of a sudden the executives are like, oh, okay, tell us how. And so the if you're listening to this, start looking at your favorite story and pick out that real moment and start to then build your before and after. Like, what were the things that led up to that? You know, how did it change, you know, people's minds in the public eye? What did it change about the person or the program, etc.? And so, yeah, I mean, like, that was a big moment in Brian's life. But before we dug in and saw the toll that it took, we didn't know that was actually going to be the moment. So, I can circle back.
So, Barry Switzer.
Yes.
The coolest cat on the planet.
Yeah. Barry did not like me for a long time until the movie came out, because when we first interviewed him, the idea at that time was still that this was going to be Barry and the Boz, or Feeding the Monster. And so, I told Coach Switzer, I was like, look, Coach, I'm going to ask you uncomfortable questions, and I know you don't want to answer them, but if you'd please just humor me, and if it's something that you don't want to talk about, say it. But I have to, in doing this, we're doing this interview to really unearth what the story of this film is going to be. You and Brian are the most important interviews, and so I'm just going to ask these questions. And he's really someone who's used to people coming in and kissing the ring, and you know, if he doesn't want to talk about X, Y, or Z, you're not going to talk about X, Y, or Z. And I really tried his patience, and to his credit, he really wanted to do something that was positive for Brian, and so he sat through this you know, multi-hour interview, not thrilled with where I was going. But, you know, I kept saying to him, look, if we can get your truth in this, then you're going to come off well in this film. If it looks like that you're trying to hide something, that will play. I mean, I'm not going to try and, you know, bury you with this, or anything like that, as long as you're telling your truth. And so And the funny thing is that it was a great day, except for it being at times difficult. It was Barry's story is incredible. So we did the whole thing where we talked about Bootlegger's Boy, you know, his I'm going to get some of this wrong because it's been a while, but Barry was the son of a bootlegger. He grew up on the wrong side of the tracks. All of his friends were African American because he grew up in that part of town. And there's murder, there's suicide. It's a really sad story, and a triumphant one, though, that he came out of this from his small town in Arkansas and went to the University of Arkansas. But so we went through all of that, and we also went through the end of his time at OU, which he didn't want to talk about. But to his credit, he did, and then he just, did not like me until the movie came out. And I can tell the story about him being at the premiere in 1 second. But I mean, I know you are probably thinking about like the fur coat and is there
that's exactly what I'm thinking about. They told the story of how in awe Bosworth was. I think Bosworth told the story about how awe he was of Switzer walking into his high school and pointing at Brian Bosworth. And that was one of my favorite. That was, I think, there was a lot in the Pony Excess that was like that, the grandeur of college football versus this one was a very sobering look at in an individual and a couple of relationships. But that kind of brought in the grandeur of college football, I think, because Barry Switzer embodied that in a lot of ways. He's just generally very entertaining in this film.
Oh, a lot of fun. And I mean, we when we went to shoot this B-roll, I made sure I was there because I wanted to be there. But we shot B-roll of that cafeteria. It didn't really matter. It could have been any school cafeteria. But we had to go there where where's Boss? Where's Boss? I got to see him. So the great thing was is that we definitely got a number of stories of that high school lunchroom cafeteria moment, because it really made an impression on everybody who was eating lunch at the time. As I'm sure it'd be burned in your brain that the time that Barry Switzer walked into our high school wearing a fur coat yelling
and pointed at one of my friends
right.
And said he wants him to come play linebacker for him. Another contrast to kind of the Pony Excess that, you had a clear vision from the get-go, since it was your passion project, you're an SMU fan, about what the story you wanted to tell, how you wanted to tell it, and kind of, I think, what you wanted people to think about SMU when you, when they saw the film. When you wrap this one, and sent it, did whatever you got to do to get it to premiere, however that process works. When, as someone who, you had some initial bias about Bosworth, originally you weren't interested in making it, and then you met the man, went through this process, went through all these interviews, saw his regret. What did you want viewers to take away from, after that, from the finished product? What did you think, what did you want someone to watch this and say, what's that takeaway?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's like you're never too old to grow up. You're never too old to own the wreckage of your past. I mean, for me, it's like we do so much to try and get away from who we are, especially at a young age. For many of us, it can be alcohol related mistakes, but it's all about this idea of like being something that you're not. And if you at least for me and my college experience, I remember there's so much that I went through that all my friends went through, that those are things that you don't want to necessarily define you for the rest of your life, because you're in college to make mistakes. You're in college to learn what you're not supposed to do in a world where you're on your own finally. And Brian was someone whose mistakes were public, and then he never got to heal publicly from them. So, like, you know, you might have a negative view of LeBron James, but for the most part, people seem to have a positive vibe about LeBron. Maybe you don't like him because he's beaten your teams, but there was a time when LeBron went to Miami initially, and the way that worked out, as you recall, was the choice, was that what it was called? Where the publicly televised, you know, I'm gonna tell you where I'm gonna go, and I'm taking my talents to South Beach, and mm-hmm. so
yeah, the decision.
Yeah, there you go, the decision. It was really interesting because when we were making this movie, and during the time we were making it, LeBron was still in Miami, and you know, I talked about how LeBron had made that announcement at a time when he was really around the same age as Boz had been when Boz did the t-shirt thing. And so I talked about it a lot. And then during the course of making the movie, LeBron went back to Cleveland, and he wrote this letter to Cleveland. And I was like, see, that's it. You know, LeBron was a young guy. He made a brash ego-y mistake as a young guy, being a young guy. But because he stayed in the public eye, he was able to grow in front of us in a way that Bosworth never could. So wherever Brian went, they always wanted the Boz, and the Boz wasn't him. And so for me, I wanted Brian to be able to go to places, and if people recognized him, it'd be okay for him to just be Brian rather than this jerk. And I was fortunate enough to get to know Brian as a friend during the course of making this, and you could really see it. We would go out, and he'd be Brian, and then all of a sudden somebody would come up and would want the Boz, and this, you know, animal jerky, you know, thing would come out of him, and it was just kind of like, all right, Brian, I'll catch you tomorrow. You know, I think I've gotten out of it more than I could have ever expected, but to just sort of like understand and see Brian successfully living and knowing that we were just a tiny part of that. It was such a gift to be present and to document, and for him to allow us inside this really transformative time in his life where again he became comfortable being who he is. And it's a beautiful thing. He still makes mistakes because he spent 30 years playing this character, but you can see his, his true self coming through. Every time he may make a mistake, they're not as public. But he's a good guy who needs to have more people rooting for him as so many of us do. And I guess that, I mean, like, I'm rambling on this answer, but it's really the idea of being able to make some mistakes, being able to, and then having the ability to own them. And for a lot of us, we're not in the public eye. And if you make a mistake within the public eye, the biggest way to recover from it is to be able to own it in that space. And so that's really what I'm the most proud of and happy with is seeing him grow and seeing him interact with people and people wanting to know him as Brian Bosworth.
I think that's an okay answer to ramble on too. You said rambling, but I think all that was important because I think the thing about documentaries is how you feel or what you learned after you watch them. I think in a lot of ways, and maybe film in general. And in Bosworth, obviously, it's been quite an odyssey. Shouts to him. He recovered enough to be in the Longest Yard remake, which I really enjoy. It's on TNT all the time. He's one of the prison guard football players. I want to get you out of here with one. We mentioned that the t-shirt thing was probably the most important point in the film, or the kind of like the climax in the film, the death penalty from Pony Excess. In the same way, and we talked about the Switzer story being one of my favorites. Did you have a favorite story or part of the film or something we haven't talked on yet, or maybe something you heard off camera that didn't make it in that was like, this is my favorite thing I've heard while making this movie?
Oh boy, that is a really good question. And you know, nothing's really coming to me beyond all the great stories about Switzer walking into the locker room. But I mean, you know, we did go into some detail on things that couldn't necessarily be corroborated, which weren't, you know, as positive, but it was just really showing the extent of Brian's dad to the detriment of his son's joy in the game, and like those things were, I mean, they were fascinating to me in the sense of how to sort of ruin the fun of a game for a kid. But I mean, I honestly can't say that the quote that my editor and my producers and we, though, you know, it was always like, where's boss? just no matter what. And I mean, like, I'm really trying to recall, but the, you know, I loved coming in every day when the boxes were being gone through. I mean, it was while we were editing, so I had to walk through the rooms where the people were going through the boxes, and it was just like, you know, it was such an awesome way to walk into the edit bay just to sort of like see all this memorabilia. And it was also, I mean, what was also fun for me as just a football fan was to strip away the veneer of the character of the Boz and strip away, you know, whether I was a fan or not of Oklahoma, and just enjoy Brian Bosworth as a football player, because he was spectacular and he would just take over these games. And, you know, I mentioned it in Pony Excess when we talked about that as well. It was so much fun to just be able to see these old games and enjoy these elements on their own. And I mean, like, even though we did interviews about how amazing he was, but then to just press play and see him like take over games, it was crazy. And also, like, I you know, now that I say this, my top memory is like of the emotional contingent for my editor, and we had more than one editor, I should say, but for the most part, it was my lead editor Christos Pathiakis and I that were in the edit bay. And to see Christos, you know, go through this and just have this like fatherly love for someone that he really didn't even meet, and just wanting the best for this guy as we put this out in the world, was really amazing. And then I remember we were at the premiere, and like, you know, Christos and I had spent every day with Brian for, you know, 9 months, and he didn't know that, right? But like, you know, it was just like the kind of the emotion of celebrating that, and Brian's like, "Oh, who's this Christos guy?" You know, and just the it was such a fun emotion to sort of really care about someone who, growing up with him as a piece of pop culture, and not thinking of him as, you know, a human being behind that, to really take this kind of ownership of the love and nurturing of his emotional well-being was really cool. And I will say that, speaking of the premiere, the end of the story with Barry Switzer is, Barry, again, was not happy with me, and we got him out to the premiere in New York, and he wasn't talking to me, any of that kind of stuff. He did not want to be there, but Brian was like, "Please, coach, I need you to be there." So when we did the New York premiere, at the beginning, the ESPN producers, executives are introducing everybody that's there. And when they introduce Coach Switzer, he has to stand up and he tells the whole audience, "I just need to announce that I'm here under duress."
Forever the showman, by the way.
Right. And so, like, the crazy thing is that, oh man, a week after the movie came out, he loved it, and he was so happy with me, and like everything was all good. And I was like, Coach, I told you I wasn't gonna, I'm like, just tell me the truth. I'm not here to do a gotcha piece. And that's exactly what he thought that I was doing. But, Brian had chosen to trust me, and Barry was trusting Brian, but relying on his lifelong, negative reaction to people who he didn't know, who asked him things he didn't want to talk about.
Well, Thaddeus, it's a fantastic film. It's an emotional film. I think you did a knockout job. I'm glad that you were the guy behind the reins, and I am glad that you were able to join me, talk about this one. Tell the folks where they can follow you on social media, where they can check out any upcoming work and any past work.
Yeah, so just follow me at Thad Films on Twitter and Instagram. I'm also on Facebook. You can friend request me there. I'm Thaddeus Matula. If you don't know, already know someone I know, I probably won't say yes for a couple months. Definitely on Insta and Twitter. The I could give you websites, etc., but it's really not worth it because you'll get all your information there. And look in the future. I've got a doc series coming up next year about special needs adults who put on a musical together. That's a different kind of story for me. And then I also have
That sounds like something that's going to make me cry.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. That's kind of the that's kind of the plan. I mean, the thing is that I'm a big fan of the human spirit and finding people's passion and allowing people to connect with a person's passion. I mean, like, for example, with Brian and the Boz, I made that in Austin. And so pretty much everybody that I interacted with on a daily basis, a lot of them were Texas grads or fans or whatnot. And so the cool thing was making that in Austin and seeing that I had such an impact on all those people who, hated the Sooners, hated Boz, but to be able to go through and root for the guy, etc., it's just like, it's, if you can connect again with an individual's passion, you can make fans out of anybody for that person. And I think that like these individuals with intellectual disabilities, they have this, there are challenges for them. Often it's said that, oh, they're just like us except for X, Y, and Z, but really just living can be a challenge to overcome. And so we're going to have a great time seeing these individuals come together to create an original musical and memorize lines and get up on a stage. And it's just going to be a beautiful emotional thing and triumph of the human spirit. Then at the same time next year, I'm doing a post-apocalyptic Western. So that'll be fun too.
Well, I teared up watching a Ritz commercial tonight, so your upcoming series is going to get me. But Thaddeus, I appreciate you taking the time. If you enjoyed this episode of Big Screen Sports, please remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. If you haven't yet, rate and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, as those do help the pods. Next week, we're starting the rewatch Eastbound and Down, Season 1. Me and Jeremy Lost from the Blue Wire Network. Looking forward to that. If you're an Eastbound and Down fan, I hope you'll tune in. We'll see you next Monday. Thanks for listening.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.